We will call the meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. While we're waiting for the commissioner and the department to get things ready here, we will look at the minutes from last meeting. Representative Lilly, would you have you had time to peruse the minutes and make sure they meet your satisfaction?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They're some of the better minutes I've seen while my service here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Lilly moves approval of minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
We have one opposed. Minutes are approved. With that, let's get right into it and welcome the Minnesota Department of Labor Industry. And Commissioner, feel free to go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ken Peterson, recently appointed Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry by Governor Dayton.
I'm going to interrupt right away. Congratulations, by the way. I should have done that earlier.
Thank you
nice
very much.
Nice to have you here.
And I wish congratulations to all of you for being elected or reelected. So,
we all appreciate that.
We'll get back to you.
Maybe you won't so much in May.
We might be done by mid-April. We don't know.
That's right.
Yeah. Be positive. You're right. You're right, Mr. Chairman. With all other things, you are always correct. Anyway, thank you for inviting us to be here. With me at the table this afternoon is John Rakowski, the department's government relations person. Also with us today is Chris Iden, the department's deputy commissioner. She's back here. If you have questions from constituents or from matters related to the department, please feel free to contact me or John Rakowski. John's up here almost every day. John's number is 651-284-5103, and my number is 284-5010. We'll get back to you right away. If you have any questions, we want to help you. You will get constituent concerns. Sometimes they'll be for us, and sometimes they'll be against us. We'll always try to work them out and do the best we can to be as responsive as possible to you. As some of you may know, this is my second stint as Commissioner of Labor and Industry. I served in the same position from 1988 to 1990. The department has changed considerably since then. It's added some tasks and dropped some, and the laws we implement have changed, and also technology, of course, has made huge differences. However, after being there a month, I can report to you that the department employees are very hardworking, as they were then. I think they have a very good work ethic. And I also think that they're committed to serving the people of our state. And I also want to say that the department, I believe, has been very well managed under my predecessor, Steve Svigum, who had the job for, I believe, 4 years or 3 years. We'll go off the PowerPoint. However, the PowerPoint does have some, it was set up, we went for our budget committee, so there's a lot of numbers in there, so I'll just go over those. I realize it's not a budget presentation. However, if you have any questions on budget issues, please ask them. But I realize this is more of a subject matter committee and not a budgetary committee. But I couldn't take the things out, so I left them in there, and I'll try to go through it as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
And also, the numbers on the budget, you'll see them, are all tentative since the governor has not released his budget yet. But they probably will be close. And also, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, I'd like to invite members to ask any questions
sure. As
we go through the presentation and to talk about it whenever they want.
That sounds good.
The mission of the department is to ensure that Minnesota's work and living environments are equitable, healthy, and safe. Our vision is to be trusted. And to be an impartial regulator for employees, employers, and property owners. When the governor asked me to take this job, he instructed me that my first task was to try to be sure to take steps to ensure that no Minnesota jobs were lost, to try to keep whatever any jobs we had in Minnesota, or to keep the jobs we had in Minnesota, not to do any overarching regulatory steps. But also to be fair with people and to obey the law. So so my philosophy is follow the law and keep the jobs in the state, and also with that everybody that the department deals with be treated fairly and decently, whether it's a building owner, an injured worker, or an insurance company, to treat them as fairly and directly as possible. And internally, I want our employees to work hard, to work efficiently, I'd like them to feel good about the work they do, and that each can go home and with the idea of the fact that they're proud of working at the Department of Labor and Industry. This is a summary of activities. I'll go in detail as I go through the department, but I'll talk a little bit what we have here. The Department of Labor and Industry agency activities are designed to ensure that workplaces are free from injury and illness. This is what we do in our OSHA sections. We have two OSHA sections, Occupational Safety and Health Compliance and Occupational Safety and Health Consultation. The second here, our buildings are safe and healthy for those who occupy them. This is done through our construction codes and licensing committees and staff that we do a variety of things. I'll come back. We'll talk more in detail on those. Workers injured on the job are provided treatment and benefits required by law. This is the workers' compensation section. This is the biggest section of our department. It also, as you'll see, accounts for our largest expenditures for a variety of reasons. A fourth, workers from all communities have the opportunity to develop critical skills through apprenticeship training. And this is just the apprenticeship program, which I think is one of the great ways, on-the-job training is one of the great ways of learning. Probably most of us have learned how to do jobs by watching other people. And the apprenticeship programs are regularly designed programs to do just that. The next, workers who construct and inspect buildings are qualified to perform their work. This is our licensing section. We ensure that electricians, plumbers, and others are properly licensed. Workers, potential workers, employers have a clear understanding of their rights and responsibilities in the workplace. Every Minnesota workplace is supposed to have up to signs about OSHA and also about your rights and responsibilities as a Minnesota employee. And we put those out. We try to do seminars. We try to talk to many people and also to enforce a law that people understand their rights in the workplace and that they're able to enforce them. Finally, that Minnesotans have access to reliable resources to help them understand and comply with the laws and regulations the agency administers and enforces. We do this through a variety of seminars and that sort of thing. I'm starting to feel I'm repeating myself over and over again, but here we'll do some more specific. We administer laws related to employment, apprenticeship, workplace safety, workers' compensation, construction of buildings. We provide training and outreach and other resources to customers, promulgate construction codes, conduct plan reviews. For a public building, they submit a plan for us to review to make sure that it's going to be it's well constructed, it will not have any code problems with it. We also review workers' compensation claims and oversee the provision of benefits. That's one of the, as we'll go into a lot more detail, that's one of the chief tasks we do, is just basically supervise the state's workers' compensation system. We don't have a publicly run system like they do in some other states. Ours are run by insurance companies, but we make sure that injured workers get their benefits if they're entitled to them, and that everybody has their fair day in court or have a hearing, and if they're entitled to benefits, they receive them in a timely fashion. We provide informal dispute resolution services. We provide mediation and other ways of helping to solve problems before they have to go to the Office of Administrative Hearings and require a full-blown trial. Provide vocational rehab services. This is for injured workers to try to help injured workers get back on the job as quickly as possible. Issue penalties for violations of the law. I guess that goes without saying. Issue professional licenses and certifications. We issue over 110,000 licenses every biennium. Most of them are to trades like plumbers, electricians, others that we issue license to, and then register apprenticeship programs. This is just the department's chart, our organizational chart. You can see there's a commissioner, a deputy commissioner, two assistant commissioners, that one is over the workers' compensation section, and the other is over our labor standards section, which is apprenticeship, the labor standards, and code administrative services. I don't know. Organization charts are always boring. If anyone wants to really spend a lot of time on it, I'm certainly willing to talk about it, but I don't want to. Here is the only reason I'm going to talk about this a little bit, this next chart, Mr. Chairman, is this is just where we get our money. We're a little unique from most departments in that we get very little money from the general fund. The department is funded, the workers' compensation sections and OSHA are funded in part by an assessment that goes on workers' compensation insurance bills. And that also funds the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, as well as the Office of Administrative Hearings. But the biggest chunk of this money goes out to pay benefits to injured workers. I'll explain those. Those are benefits that are derived that were in the law prior to 1995. I'll describe why they're so that percentage is slowly decreasing, but it takes a long time. It'll be until 2040, 2050 till those numbers are completely gone. But I'll go into a little more detail on that. And the construction codes, when we all our work we do in providing electrical licenses and other construction licenses, that sort of thing, are all it's a self paid for funds. People pay to get the services. So nothing comes out of your tax dollars. I don't need to go into that. The reason I'm going to stop here is the purpose of the Workers' Compensation Fund is to provide special benefits and services authorized under the Workers' Compensation Law. The first two are two that have been repealed, but people had rights to those benefits prior to, in the case of the supplementary benefits, which we pay out in a biennium over $100 million each biennium. They were done away with for workers injured after 1995. But workers who were injured prior to 1995 are still entitled to those benefits. And so that's why we have to keep paying for those. And second injury benefits were done away with in 1992, and we're still obligated to pay for workers who were injured prior to that time to the tune of around $21 million every 2 years. Those numbers, as I said, will slowly decrease over time as people die off or they're no longer eligible for the benefits. Then we also pay out $19.6 million every 2 years to employees of uninsured employers and bankrupt self-insured employers. You're an injured worker. You go to find out who your company's insured by, and you find out that your company's not insured at all. So then you're entitled to benefits from the state. And with for bankrupt self-insured employees, they wouldn't have an insurance company. They just can't pay their own benefits, so the state picks it up. And then we go into the other things we pick up the cost for. But those are the kind of big costs of the workers' compensation system that we deal with on the state basis for your purposes. I don't think we need to do that. This is the next section. Workers' compensation came about. The idea of workers' compensation was passed in Minnesota, I believe, in 1913, 1912. It was part of a nationwide movement. The idea was to do. It was based on a model put together by Chancellor Bismarck in Germany in the 1880s. But the idea is that employees give up their right to sue for injuries on the job. They can't sue in district court for injuries on the job. In return, they get a set benefit for their injuries. On the other hand, employers get, as part of that deal, they avoid the lawsuits. That can be very unpredictable, depend on the juries, depend on the judge, depend on the circumstances. They promise to pay benefits on the one hand, but they avoid lawsuits. So that's the basic trade-off. And so labor and management came together, and that it was the predecessor to the State Chamber of Commerce and the predecessor to the state AFL-CIO who made that agreement in 1913, and the agreement's held ever since then. And it's a model that's done, I think, in every state in the union. It's worked pretty well. Obviously, sometimes some individuals will think that some injured workers will think the system's not working very well for them. And on the other hand, some employers will think that the system is charging them too much. But the nature of the contract, so to speak, or the deal is that each gave up certain things in order to get certain predictable outcomes. What we do in the workers' compensation section, we help employees injured on the job receive proper medical treatment and benefit payments in a timely manner. If you're entitled to benefits, you're not getting them, you call us up. We help try to get it straightened out. And also, if your employer says it's not a workplace injury, you got hurt at home, well, then we help make sure that the dispute is joined and that the two of you have a chance to first try to mediate it and then go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, have a trial, and then determine who's right and who's wrong. And if you lose there, you can appeal to the Workers' Comp Court of Appeals. We also we mediate disputes. We issue penalties for late benefit payments to injured employees. If an insurance, basically an insurance company who's in the business should be able to deliver the payments to injured employee that she or he's entitled to in a timely fashion. If they don't, then we issue penalties for that. And review records to ensure that state laws are followed. We're divided into these four different areas, which I'm not sure we need to go into lots of detail on claim service investigations. What some of the things we do there, though, is we verify insurance that people have, make sure they're living with mandatory coverage, and collect assessments. The benefit management dispute resolution is kind of the heart of the department. For an injured worker or an employer has a question, they contact these people and they try to help them out the best way they can. For data management and training, we get an awful lot of documents. We got a whole basement full. We're in a big building. We got a basement full of this stuff, of documents that we're trying to put on computers. You can imagine all the stuff we're getting from cases that go back to the 1950s. So we got a lot of stuff around. And so a lot of it's imaging, taking care, managing those files. And also this division also does a certain amount of training to employers and to insurance industry to make sure they're complying with our laws. In Voc Rehab, we have a small unit that provides rehab to injured workers. In terms of department, or in terms of what we're doing, I think the department has been pretty well managed over the last number of years. We've reduced the number of employees through some early retirements this past year, but also through just attrition over time. But since 2004, 2005, reduced the number of employees by 25%. Being very acknowledging the fact that we are assessing people for the money, we want to manage as well as possible. We do have five boards and advisory councils that help us out. One of those is a very important one that Representative Kiefer was just appointed to by the Speaker, and that is the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. In 1995, the legislature decided that before it would hear workers' compensation bills, that it had to be approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. The reason was that workers' compensation had been a very contentious issue in the legislature. I can tell you that from personal experience. I was a commissioner, as I said, in the late 80s and early 90s, and it was a very difficult issue. People were just beating each other up all the time. It wasn't necessarily a partisan issue. It was more of a very tough issue. The legislature at the time was just, I think, was a little sick of the struggle. And so they said, if you're going to bring a workers' compensation bill, take it through this Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. It's chaired by the head of the state AFL, co-chaired by the head of the state AFL-CIO and the head of the state Chamber of Commerce. And then there are a number of representatives from business, an equal number of representatives from labor, as well as ex-officio members from the legislature, four legislators, two from the House and two from the Senate. And they review bills we want to bring, and if we can't get a consensus there, they don't come to the legislature. That way you avoid these contentious problems, and you know that a workers' compensation bill comes to you from the Department of Labor and Industry that has the backing of both labor and industry. This year, we're hopeful we can get something on dispute resolution to send up here to speed some of the disputes. We have our first meeting next week, and so we'll find out what it looks like, but we're relatively optimistic there. The big issues that we have, though, are this dispute resolution, trying to make sure for both sides that their disputes, their battles, get through the process as quickly as possible. That regardless of you win or lose, you deserve an answer quickly. So the same basis that we deserve an answer in our civil courts or our criminal courts. You deserve an answer quickly, whether you're right or wrong. You need an answer as quickly as possible. So that's one thing we're trying to do. A second is the whole issue of medical costs, an issue that's spread across our society. We all know about it. When I was the commissioner last time, medical costs constituted 40% of the total workers' comp dollar you paid for your insurance premium. Today, it constitutes 60%. So in the last 20 years, it's flipped from being significant, but now it's majority of your costs. When you pay your insurance premium for workers' comp, the majority of that is going for medical costs. It's not going for indemnity benefits, which are basically for your lost time. So we need to do something on trying to slow down the increase in medical costs. There's no magic potion to that, though. We're working on it. I'm not sure how we're going to do it. Commissioner Spiegel tried very hard in a number of cases, and others have tried. So we'll do the good fight and try to do what we can do in that area. However, it's a difficult issue. It's a very difficult issue. We just finished a study where Minnesota is compared in a variety of ways with 16 other states in terms of our medical costs. And unfortunately, because of a couple high-cost areas, we do come out on the higher end. Our overall work comp costs seem to be around the middle, maybe 20 to 30th in rank, depending on the year. But our medical costs seem to be higher on the higher end, so we need to do something on that. However, I do think the system is pretty good. The idea behind workers' comp, you want to make it predictable. So the insurance company knows how much they have to set aside so that an employer knows how much she or he is going to have to pay over the next 5 or 10 years so they can plan. And I think our system is relatively stable today, which is what you want. We've got 250 insurance groups selling workers' compensation in the state. And that means there's probably more companies because some insurance firms have several companies, as many of you know. And so we do it. There's a lot of competition, and I think that competition, as well as the law, the changes you've made, are paying off, keeping a relatively stable work comp system. Do you have any other questions on work comp? If it's,
I don't see any.
Okay, I'll keep blundering along then. The next area is OSHA. This Occupational Safety and Health Administration is what OSHA stands for, but basically it's workplace safety. And we have two sections. One is called compliance and one's called consultation. And we enforce the Minnesota Occupational Safety and Health Act and standards to ensure that safe and healthful working conditions for Minnesota workers through on-site inspections, issuing citations for noncompliance, interpreting standards, and helping employers understand how to comply with those standards. I think you all know what OSHA does. They try to make sure you have safe workplaces. OSHA inspections are based on the data we receive on workers' compensation data. The more dangerous areas, or firms or industries are inspected more often. Just which stands to reason. So we look at those more carefully than we would at, say, a law office where you don't have very many. And so those are the ones that will get inspected more often. We review and adopt new OSHA regulations and respond to employee complaints of workplace hazards and discrimination. You see that picture there? It's an interesting picture. It's a trench. And trenches are a huge problem. The problem with trenches is, narrow holes in the ground. They fall in. And so the reason why I put this in is just to show some of the risks that an injured worker or a worker could run through. And I'm not quite sure why it's in it, but that's the reason. And you can see that the trench could cave in on this fellow and kill him. Minnesota OSHA is we're a partnership state. I think it's about 20 or 25 other states are in similar situations. We pay for 50% of our OSHA funds, and the federal government pays for 50. With the remainder of the states have the federal government picking up the entire package. For our purposes, we think running our own program has worked out better. That over time, we've had we have programs that have we believe have furthered the cause of safety. We've had a right to know law. We've had the so-called AWARE Act, which helps people do safety plans in the workplace, as well as other initiatives that the federal government hasn't done. We also are able to have our own standards for penalties, which by and large are less than the federal government. And so we think that our system has worked pretty well. We have pretty safe workplaces. Minnesota employers, I think generally, they're obviously outliers, but generally Minnesota employers try to do the best thing they could by their workers and try to comply with OSHA as well as they can. So That's OSHA compliance. They're the ones that enforce the law. Then we have OSHA consultation. This is a smaller unit. It's paid for 90% by the federal government, 10% by the state government. And what we do at consultation, if you have, if you want some help at your workplace, some free advice as to how you can improve safety at your workplace, you call us up. We send out people who are no longer inspectors, but are called consultants, and they tell you what you can do to make improvements on your workplace to put you in compliance with OSHA laws to make the workplace a safer place. There's no contact between Minnesota or the consultation and compliance. So if a consultant comes out to someone's workplace and finds out there's some hazards there, they're not going to call compliance right away and say, hey, get out there and get some you can get some penalties off these people. There is no contact unless there's an imminent danger, unless there is a possibility of serious injury or death, then unless something is remedied right away. With we try to emphasize our OSHA consultation with fields, with industries that have higher than normal injuries, you know, rates of injuries. We also are trying to do work with large construction projects. In 1992, after some, was it, after the original, or 91, the original construction of Mall America, we had a couple of serious injuries out there. And so since then, we've tried to work with major construction projects to minimize the number of injuries and deaths on those major projects. And there's a list there of the ones we've done. And they've been pretty successful. We're very happy with them. Like at Target Field, we had only minor injuries that came out of there. And we'd like to think it's in part because of the partnerships we formed with the contractors. We also have recent general industry partnerships with a variety of companies throughout the state where we talk to them about safety and help them through their problems. And it's worked out pretty well. Let's see if I am right. Our next area that we work in is called construction codes and licensing.
Mr. Commissioner, can I ask a question about the previous slide? Under recent general industry partnerships, Ackerman Incorporated in Brownsdale.
Yeah.
I've lived in Minnesota my whole life. Where's Brownsdale?
Yeah, this is I've lived in Minnesota my entire life, and I've never heard of the town either. But actually, it's a pop quiz.
Anybody in the audience?
I've been there many times, Mr. Chairman. It's a lovely, bucolic community in greater Minnesota. Very pastoral.
So it's not only bucolic, it's also pastoral.
Yeah.
We must go there as a committee.
Yeah, I think we should have. Mr. Chairman, I think that must be I saw that just now as I was reading that.
Okay.
I think it must be
I was just curious.
Brownton or maybe Browerville. I'm not sure. We'll try to figure out where it is.
Maybe it's by Ridgedale.
Thank you. Sorry.
But thank you for. At least we'll correct it. If we found out where Browndale is, we'll let you know. In 2005, Governor Pawlenty, in an administrative order which was later agreed to by the legislature, consolidated the number of construction boards into labor and into the Department of Labor and Industry. There were licensing, plumbing, high pressure piping, and construction codes and apprenticeship. Put them all in the Department of Labor and Industry. They had been independent boards, or one had been in the Department of Health, one in the Department of Administration, but they were all put in the Department of Labor and Industry. And the idea was to have a one-stop shop for the whole construction industry for codes, for permits, for licenses in the construction field. So they were all put together in the department. And I think it's worked pretty well. Probably has been able to cover, just share overhead costs, accounting costs, personnel costs, that sort of thing. We still probably do need a little bit of work on just better integration, but I think it's gone pretty well. Most people would agree, I believe. This whole thing is paid for by licenses and fees that the public pays. So there's no general fund monies. You can see we have 113 employees. In addition, we have 83 contractors who conduct electrical inspections. There are contractors throughout the state who are not public employees or state employees, but instead the contract with our electrical board to do electrical inspections. No one, you want, if you're building a home, you put it in an office, you want electrical inspection right away. You don't want to wait for 2 weeks for someone from St. Paul to get there. So we have people spread around the state who are contractors who try to get out there as quickly as possible and do a good inspection. And obviously when construction activity is down, they get less business. When construction activity is up, they get more business. And you can see one-third of the budget there is related to electrical inspections. Electrical stuff is obviously important. The construction codes and licensing advise the public and enforce laws, rules, codes, and regulations regarding construction codes and licensing. You can see the various places where we work on building codes and standards. The last building code we adopted, statewide building code, was 2006, I believe. We did not adopt the 2009. We're looking at the 2012 one. Each one of these, whenever you adopt a new construction code, you can well imagine there's a lot of debate that goes on from people in the field. They each have their own idea. A lot of people have their own ideas of what should be in the code and what shouldn't be in the code. We also license residential building contractors, electrical licensing and inspection, plumbing and engineering, high pressure or boilers, all the schools in the state, the buildings in the state that use boilers are inspected by our people. With high pressure piping systems, boats for hire. There are only a few big lakes in the state that have boats for hire, but we do inspect those boats. And then we certify independent contractors. We regulate codes and license protect the public. The different things we do, license them, certify them. Certification basically is a lower level of licensing. It's like registration, just acknowledging that you're in the business. It does not require a test. Enforcement, enforce the laws, plan reviews. As I said earlier, if you have a public building that's going up, you have to submit it to our people, and they take a look at it and make sure that it's going to be, the building's going to be safe. Then we do inspections, and code development, and education. We certify continuing education programs for the various trades and people that we license. This is an area, I can tell you, members, that this is an area you'll probably get some request from people in your districts. They may have something of conflict or some issues, and probably more than any of our other areas, you know, people, this will be an area you may want to contact. Because we had two in the last 3 days of members of the legislature contacting us on issues related to this.
Mr. Commissioner, this might be a good, since I was the guy that asked the question, we have, from a number of sources, found out where Brownsdale is.
Where is it?
It is in, is it Maurer County? Mm-hmm. Maurer County, just about down in Iowa, and 718 people. 290 households. So now we all have learned something today. Now we know where Brownsdale, Minnesota is. And I've heard that it's bucolic and pastoral.
Mr. Chair,
I might have been pastel.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Representative Atkins would take us all on a field trip there someday.
It's the chairman's committee, Commissioner. I think we'll do Summit Brewing and then Brownton.
That can also be bucolic. We'll see how that goes. Sorry we interrupt. Well, please continue.
We do. Any questions? With the next area is called our Labor Standards Division. This is another area where we get a lot of calls on. It's a relatively small area, and it's the only place in our department that has general fund dollars. But this group provides outreach and education to employers and employees about compliance with labor and employment laws, minimum wage, overtime, child labor laws, prevailing wages, parental leave laws, and employee rights regarding termination of employment and wages due. They get about 185 calls a day down this unit. Most of them can be easily answered, and they're not very difficult. However, some are difficult, and those are the ones that may lead to investigations. The whole unit gets around 24,000 phone calls each year. We also provide outreach and education about the labor laws to businesses, professional groups, Rotary clubs, chambers, schools, and other or community-based organizations that provide employment services to minority and cultural populations. We also translate a number of documents, or put together documents, and then translate them into a variety of languages, as you can see. They investigate about 500 cases a year. in this area that come out of those phone calls that that we get, and then try to take some actions. Apprenticeship is the final area that we deal with. This is another small division, but it's an important one, and one that, once again, we don't do, I don't think this country, it's not Minnesota, it's the whole country, we don't do as well the apprenticeship as we should. Some, like Germany in particular, has done a great job in their trades of developing an apprenticeship program and running a lot of people through it, training people to be highly skilled workers. We have a good apprenticeship program. It's not as good as it possibly could be. That what we do is a federal apprenticeship law, and we basically enforce that. What we do is go in and certify, supervise the operation of various apprenticeship programs being run by different businesses and industries throughout the state. Some are built up in conjunction with a union, others are not. But you can see we regulate, supervise, promote apprenticeship programs that have been approved and meet state standard requirements, provide technical assistance to employers developing apprenticeship programs. We have 300 registered programs in the state, and provide schools, guidance counselors, and other business and industry groups with information regarding program requirements, selection criteria, and general information about conducting registered apprenticeship programs. Out of those 300 programs, we've got there are about 7,200 to 7,500 apprentices in the state at any given time. That goes, because a lot of them are in the construction trades, that goes up and down depending on the construction business. Right now, it's probably down more than it was, say, 5 years ago when there's more activity in that sector. We conduct approximately 600 visits annually to sponsors, employers, and promotional visits to prospective sponsors. Like we go out to a company, say a company's got some sort of a apprenticeship program in computer graphics. We go out to take a look at it, make sure that the apprentices are getting the training they're entitled to or that they want and that they've agreed to do, and make sure that's working. We approve and monitor programs in the construction trades, plant maintenance, graphic arts, and power trade industry. The length, some apprenticeship programs are done just purely on length. Others combine length and competence, and others more or less emphasize just competence. But each one is done, is put together in terms of the needs of the employees and the needs of the industry itself, the long-term needs of the industry. A lot of them are done in conjunction with a local Minsku campuses, as well as some are done some private schools like Dunwoody. But the Minsku campuses play a very important role in all our apprenticeship programs, that, as they do in much skill training in the state. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Loon. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. On your apprenticeship programs, is there always a connection, I think I heard you say, with a technical college or Minsky or something, or can the employer create an apprenticeship program that meets your standards?
There's not always a connection with the Minsky campus. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. It sort of depends on the field and the trade, and sometimes the local Minsky campus is simply unable to provide the services that they might need to. But it's just up to the individual employer and whoever Cheery is trying to train or whatever they're trying to do. And not all, like I wanted to say, I should point out that some people think they're union-based. Or a lot of them are done by unions, but a lot of them aren't.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And those programs, are they the content of those programs and that, is that designed by units under your direction, or is that really done by the entity and it just has to be sort of given the stamp of approval by you in terms of length of time the apprenticeship program is in operation and those kinds of things?
Commissioner Loon, it's designed by the people involved with it. We take a look at it, make sure it meets a minimal standard, so it's not just an empty, you know, sort of a promise of something that they can't deliver on. But for the most part, it's done by the people in the field. They know what's best, and we recognize that. And so, and if we can maybe provide them some help if we know of another program that's similar to what they're doing, and that sort of thing. But by and large, they're designed by the individual business or employer, whether it's public or private.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final question. So then, is there any direct relationship between the apprenticeship and your department in terms of verifying that at the end of their apprenticeship they've kind of learned what they've been promised they'll be taught? Or
which, Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner Peterson.
Yes, we try to give certificates of some sort. We test that they have that the program's objectives have been made have been met, and that the individuals have learned what they were intended to learn as they started. We're not out there giving tests on crane operation or something, but we are trying to make sure we do go out there and make sure that both parties agree that they've learned what they've agreed to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two serious questions. Will Representative Davids yield?
He will yield. Representative Atkins.
Can you tell us, Representative Davids, where Browndale is?
Mr. Chairman, where what is?
Brownsdale.
Brownsdale's in Maurer County, just outside my district. And
there we go.
I have Brownsville in my district.
Right, right. We were discussing that.
Second oldest city in the state of Minnesota next to Stillwater. They're really old.
If you could join us perhaps on time, Representative Davids, when we have these serious discussions about where Brownsdale is, you missed a very important piece of the discussion.
We all learned something today.
But is it bucolic?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman?
Actually, I do have a question, though, for the commissioner. I take issue with one of the 13 languages not being Croatian for those. But there's an English-only bill that's apparently traveling. Representative Drazkowski, I think, introduced it. Number one, do you know if that would apply to your department? But you have a number of safety rules, child labor laws, and so forth. Whether or not the English-only standard would apply, and whether it would be useful for the efforts within your department,
Commissioner Peterson,
Representative Atkins, Mr. Chairman, I haven't seen the bill, so I don't know how it would apply. I do know that there has been demand from employers to have adequate translations of documents so that their employees know what they're doing. But I haven't seen the bill, so I can't comment on it.
Okay. Mr. Chair and
Representative Mack.
Commissioner, thank you. And I haven't read the bill either, but as long as we have the opportunity with you here, my understanding from talking to employers, though, is that it's not something that the government generally demands that the language be in multiple languages or that the rules be in multiple languages, but rather from employers like me or some folks that I know that that like to have the translation because they occasionally employ people and they want to make sure that they're safe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, that was the reason why they've done them in this area.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I think you're saying.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Atkins' point, I really think we need to pass the bill so we can find out what's in it.
No, that's pastoral. Representative Waller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Representative Davids. You've had a bonding project for every city in southeastern Minnesota. Did you do one for Brown? Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids. Mallory, not yet.
Depends on redistricting.
Representative Kiefer, help us. This thing is slipping out of control. Get us back on track.
Thank you, Chairman. You mentioned vocational rehabilitation on a couple of your slides, and I just got out of a committee that was all on displaced worker program with the workforce development indeed. Is this the same service, or are we running two different departments basically doing the same thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiefer, ours are aimed just at injured workers, at the needs of injured workers, trying to help them get back to work. As I understand it, the programs run by DEED are addressed to people who are out of work who are not injured. These are just for injured people.
Okay, I'm going to follow up, though, because
Representative Kiefer.
It seems like what the goal is, though, is to train someone for a new line of work, regardless of if they, whatever's wrong physically. I wouldn't hold that against them. The goal is to train somebody. So that's all. I'm just
to think about that. Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar. I understand that the one at Deed is for people, and also covers people are injured at home or just, you know, fall or something. It's nothing to do with work. It both have the same goals. I acknowledge that. I'm not quite. I don't know enough about the two programs to say whether or not there's some sort of overlap or duplication of effort. If there is, we should try to correct that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, so that completes my presentation.
Okay. Thank you. We had just had a spate of questions. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Kiefer, by the way. Any other questions for the Commissioner or Mr. Rakowski? Seeing no questions. With that, members, I think we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.